Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Film Pigs podcast. We're doing a little bit of a bacon episode this time around, but all three of us are here. Me, Todd, and I'm here with two guys named Steve. Firstly, yes. there's Steve Skelton.
That's me.
That's that guy. And there's Steve Falk.
That's the guy that's talking right now.
Yeah. And we're all here to talk about movies because we love the movies. Even when we don't like the movies themselves, we still love the movies as a thing.
Right? We love still, movies even if we don't love movies.
Yeah. Like when I see, like if I'm seeing like Aquaman 2, I still love the concept of a movie.
Right.
Did you watch that?
Oh boy, I did.
Okay, we should just, let's launch into what have you seen lately, and we can hear about Skelton's experience with Aquaman 2. What's the subtitle? Aquaman?
It's Aquaman something Kingdom
of Atlantis? King of Atlantis?
Swimming.
Can I say something here real quick?
Yeah.
So clearly, you know, particularly with Madam Web and stuff, like, and the fourth phase of Marvel being a dud, and their big bad being a real big bad, and in real life,
yeah, whoops.
I've been saying the whole time that superhero movies are for babies. I have been the lone voice in the world stating that, and now it seems like we're all just coming to realize, oh yeah, this stuff is garbage for babies. Anyway, sorry. Go
so
ahead with
Aquaman
2.
Your basic thing, Steve, is that it's gone on so long. These movies are just as good as the older movies, but they've been going on so long, everybody realizes that they've all been crap.
No.
There's been a sharp drop in quality.
There's been a sharp drop in quality, and there's been a sharp lack of evolution. I will say that the Spider-Man animated movies are the one thing that are actually taking superhero movies. Not the one, but a great example of taking this sort of, you know, 12-15 year cycle and finding and being ahead of the curve to evolve it and do something different.
Yeah, doing something fresh and groundbreaking.
Yeah, and it's pretty genius, I think, those movies.
Oh yeah.
Anyway, sorry. Speaking of genius, Aquaman 2.
Yeah, but I must counter with Aquaman 2.
How is Patrick Wilson in Aquaman 2?
Patrick Wilson, I thought, you know what? I swear to God, we talked about this last month.
Maybe.
Because I remember telling you the best part of Aquaman 2 was the hilariously CG, like, de-hunkified Patrick Wilson. Because I'm sure everyone remembers after the end of the first one, he was put in sea jail.
Yeah.
I guess. Except sea jail.
He was being a dick.
Yeah, he was the huge dick in the last one, and they went, "You're a dick, you go to sea jail." But sea jail's actually ironically not underwater. It's in the desert, so he gets all like dehydrated. Mm-hmm. And then I, for some reason, Jason Momoa needs him. They need to do the team up. It's the team up of the good guy and bad guy in the sequel.
They're brothers,
for
right?
It's for some reason. I don't even remember because this movie, like the first Aquaman, is not good, but it like is an order of magnitude more coherent. Mm-hmm. In its kind of storytelling than Aquaman. Aquaman 2, I did not understand what was happening at any moment. Other than, there's water. But at some point he has to go get his brother, Patrick Wilson, because they look so much alike. And breaks him out of sea jail, which is actually in a desert. And because he's been in this desert for so long, he's dehydrated. And it's really like clumsy, very like, oh shit, we have to render this in a weekend, de-aged Patrick Wilson with a huge ZZ Top beard because he's been in jail for so long. And that part is hilarious because it looks ridiculous. And that was the only part I enjoyed.
Well, okay. So that's a thumbs down on Aquaman 2 from Steve Skelton. Falk, have you seen anything lately? Have you had time in between happy stuff that you do?
Yeah, this weekend I saw two awful movies. So I'll just lump them together because they're both Scandinavian films. And they were both remarkably disappointing. And I usually love... I have a soft spot for Scandinavian disaster movies.
Sure.
There's a
whole, I think everybody knows that's your soft spot.
There's a whole host of them, right? It's my love language.
Yeah.
So this movie, The Abyss, just pops onto my Netflix. I'm like, wait, I didn't see this one already? Oh my God, they made another about a crevasse and...
And some fjords.
They always involve like some couple and a kid and then some mining company and then some, you know, some meters that no one's paying attention to and then blowholes over here and a gas explosion over there and someone's trying to reunite. And the Abyss does not disappoint on any of those levels. What it does disappoint on is any climax. It's the blue balls of all disaster movies. They basically had about 12 kroners to rub together to make this movie. And goddamn, it sure looks like it. The Abyss makes the other ones, and I don't even, one's called The Wave, The Quake, or one's called The Tunnel, I don't know. And this one, it makes those look like fucking masterpieces.
And The Burning Sea. Don't forget about The Burning Sea.
Yeah, avoid The Abyss. It is on Netflix, and for some reason, it's in the top 10. I think people thought it was a James Cameron movie, and it is a run. Now, the same night, then I went and saw this Danish thriller called Speak No Evil, and it's about a family who meets another Scandinavian couple from I think Holland on a trip to Italy. And then they become friends and they invite them over and, you know, spoiler, and they have this kid who has no tongue and it turns out they're not good people. And it ends in just the most, just like give up brutal, just like, we don't know how to end this. Okay. This happens and then the movie's over. And it is horrifying, but not in a fun way, just like a narratively bankrupt and dark for no reason. And horrific and like Speak No Evil. Do not see that movie. All right. Todd's gonna immediately see that movie.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I realize I just sold it to you.
Yeah. Yeah. That sounds great. I'll give you my double feature that I watched with Hill. One was a Polish movie called Mother's Day, and it was basically, you know, Taken with a Lady instead of Liam Neeson. But I really liked it. I saw some reviews saying that the fight sequences were bad, but I didn't think they were. I thought they were good because, and part of what was good about it is she, the main character, is constantly getting the shit kicked out of her.
Is this on Netflix?
Yeah, I think it is on Netflix.
I think I've seen this.
Yeah. Yeah. She's like a former secret agent who, her is estranged from her daughter who's adopted by other people, but then, you know, her kid gets threatened by her past and then she has to come in and beat everybody up.
Yeah
It's fun. It's 90 minutes. It's you know, it's fast paced, it's fun, it's gory,
good,
which I appreciate.
I'd like to see one of these movies that where it's like a special forces person who isn't about to retire or being pulled out of retirement, who isn't estranged from their family. Things are going great. And they're super happy to jump on the next assignment. And then they just get into terrible violence.
Yeah. I mean, that could work too, but this is, you know, this is fun. I liked it. And then the other one I saw, right after I watched that one was called The Cleansing. And it's a possession horror movie, you know, demons and whatnot, and in with a streaming internet show, super gory. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a good low budge B horror picture. I recommend it if you're in the mood for that sort of thing. Nice. Very gory and demons yelling at you.
Oh, you know what? I'm pretty sure last time we talked about ISS and I hadn't seen it. And I have seen ISS since.
Oh, I haven't seen that yet.
And I quite enjoyed it.
Ah, fuck, I gotta see it.
Yeah, it's kind of a nice little self-contained thriller. I liked all the actors, I liked the cast. I thought everybody did a good job. It's like, you know, it's kind of like kind of a workhorse story, you know, construction plot, you know, like you know what the setup is pretty quick. But I think everybody does a good job, you know, going through the experience of the whole kind of thriller and standoff stuff. So, yeah, it was fun. I liked it.
No, I'm glad you liked it. Yeah, I thought that one was good.
It's in that category of like, I mean, like we're going to talk about some of the other movies, and this was on my list of one of the movies that was kind of in a category of things that felt more made for me than some Oscar bait. And this is this kind of like, you know, I'm jumping ahead into our kind of bacon subject, but it's that kind of like, I really like tightly constructed and almost, you know, mid to low budget sci-fi stories that actually are trying to do more than just be like a, hey, let's rip off a Transformers or something like that. It's like they're, you know, trying to tell a story within that kind of, you know, so ISS fits into that category in kind of the same way that a few years back before what's his name got like three major pop culture roles. Prospect.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It was a little sci-fi movie with with what's his name?
Pedro Pascal.
Pedro Pascal. Yeah. Thank God he got that. Thank God he's got that comic book movie to offset his other two giant lucrative.
He got a SAG award. He's doing all right.
But again, it's like it's in that same vein of those types of movies that I really like a Silent Running.
It's not too long and it's well paced.
Yeah, no, that's again, it's like it's not a freaking Flowers of the Moon forever and ever. This movie won't end running time. It's a nice tight movie.
Forgot that movie. Falk, do you have any others that you've seen?
Yeah, I do. I went and saw a movie in Las Vegas that's only playing in Las Vegas.
Wow. Ah.
Yeah, and it's playing at a place called The Sphere.
Oh, yeah.
That place.
Yeah, and it's Darren Aronofsky's movie. It's called Postcards from Earth. And it is introducing you to a new technology. It's about an hour long, maybe. And it's sort of it's very familiar kind of story where it's like 10 minutes of these two human aliens waking up, or human beings waking up after like a lot of cryo sleep from space travel, having landed, and they're being reintroduced into like who they are. And because, you know, after that many fucking eons, in deep sleep, they don't know. And these AI voices or whatever it is are filling them in on where they're from, and they're from Earth. And it starts to tell you about Earth. And then suddenly what is a, you know, a normal, you know, 16:9 or 2:2:1, whatever screen reveals itself to be the entire building around you, the sphere that you're sitting in. And I mean, you take like the first like IMAX movie you saw where you like feel like you're flying over fucking poppy fields or the Grand Canyon or like, and this, and just times it by like a billion. Like it makes that technology look like a laser show at the observatory. It is stunning technology. I do not know how they did it. And then the movie turns into just being like a Power Squatsy or Kana Squatsy, just sort of like montage of imagery from Earth. And it's a bit heavy-handed and it's sort of echo message. As an experience, as a film experience, it's one of the most transformative I have ever experienced in terms of the technology just wowing the fuck out of you. Like, this is a moment where I'm like, okay, now movies can be something else. I don't know if it will ever be this, you know, this will ever be a thing, but it's just, it's an extraordinary experience. The weed was kicking in at the exact right time, I have to say, but the entire audience was experiencing it as one and vocalizing and enwrapped, and it was pretty fucking amazing.
Yeah, that you can look up there's like a custom camera that was made in order to capture footage.
Yeah.
In here, and it's like a 16K camera.
16K, exactly.
Yeah, it's this insane custom piece of technology that is used to capture all of the, you know, all the footage at
18K.
18K, yeah.
Yeah, it actually kind of makes up for Mother a little bit. Not quite. Anyway, well, if you have $80 and you're in Vegas, go see this.
That sounds awesome. I don't know why I would be in Vegas.
Well, sometimes
and I probably won't have $80 if I'm there.
Like some maybe if you're the next time you're pulling a heist.
Oh right. Yeah. That's why I go to Vegas, for heists. in inclement weather. I like to do the inclement weather heist.
Best time for heists.
I did see all these Oscar movies, which was what made me think, oh, let's talk about movies we feel like were made for me, you know, were made for you specifically, because like all of them, I had the same sort of reaction, which was, yeah, I get why this is a critical darling. I get why it's up for awards. I get why people say it's a good movie. It's just not for me. You know, I'm not mad at it. It's just not necessarily my thing. I saw The Zone.
Sometimes you're mad at those movies.
Sometimes I get mad. I do. I didn't get mad at any of these. I watched The Zone of Interest, and I watched Poor Things. And, you know, I didn't get mad at them. I was just like, it's not for me. And I also watched American Fiction. And that was another one where I was like, yeah, it's all right. I felt like I was watching a play, but, you know. It makes me feel lonely when these kind of movies are put up on pedestals and everybody's like, you got to see it. It's the greatest thing. And I watch it and I go, it's not for me. So I wanted to talk about movies that are for us. So we each have a list of five movies that we feel like were made for us specifically. Skelton, what's your first title?
I actually, was able to find a pretty decent sized list of movies from this last year
that fit
into some categories. So I kind of did categories of movies that were kind of made for me.
Wow, no one's making movies for me anymore.
I know.
Not at all.
But like the kind of things I like. Anyway, so, you know, my first category is kind of, I like based on a true story, kind of really small, you know, tightly thought through presentations. So not like big historical epics, but like, you know, smaller stuff. So Dumb Money was one of the movies in this category. So like Dumb Money, Blackberry, and Tetris this last year fell into that category of stuff that, you know, kind of based on a real story dramas that I really, really get into in a way that like I don't get into like a Napoleon.
Right. And they're kind of technology based in
I mean, in this case they are. They don't necessarily have to be, but that helps. Cause like, I mean, I also enjoyed Moneyball to a certain degree.
Air, did you like reason. Air?
You like I didn't Air? See Air.
Oh,
did you like the Cheeto movie?
Oh, I haven't seen the Cheeto. Wait, when did the Cheeto movie come out this last year? Or?
Yeah, Eva Longoria directed it.
Oh shit, I have not seen the
Cheeto. Hot baby. I
want to see the Cheeto movie.
No, I think that's a great like category, and those three movies obviously totally fit into that. Talking about Reddit stonks and blackberries and a game. I'm waiting for the Minecraft, not Minecraft, but a Minesweeper game to come out. From Microsoft, there's like gray blocks and you hit
one, two, five. Yeah.
Yeah, Blackberry was tremendous. I also really liked, I thought Dumb Money was a lot of fun. I didn't see Tetris though.
Yeah, Tetris I like Dumb Money a lot.
Tetris is a little bit more kind of, I think, takes more liberty.
Yeah.
But I still quite enjoy it.
The tone of Blackberry clearly takes a lot of liberty. And
yeah,
Glenn Howerton, I think we've talked about it before, but that performance should be nominated for an Oscar. It was tremendously fun.
Yes.
Just a fun villain, you know, really good.
I still got to watch that. Falk, what's your first?
Okay, well, I have five, and I'm going in reverse chronological order. So we're going to start with the oldest movie first.
Excellent.
And the first one is called The Big Picture. It's a movie directed by Christopher Guest.
Yes.
Perhaps the best movie he's ever directed. And I know a lot of people love his mockumentaries, and I like a couple of them well.
But the big picture feels like
it was made just for me. I loved Kevin Bacon in the 80s, and this is 89. I just sort of had like a boy crush on him from my whole childhood. Jennifer Jason Leigh, similarly, I just love her entire vibe. I recognize Michael McKean who played, well, anyway, so if you guys don't know, real quick, kid gets out of film school, makes his short. Dan Schneider, the now canceled Dan Schneider, actually wins the best short, but his movie gets some attention. Martin Short plays an agent who's absolutely just one of those gonzo performances.
Yeah,
basically completely then kind of ripped it off for Father the Bride, but his character, but in Big Picture is where you get it in its distilled perfect form. It's a movie about friendship and Hollywood and betrayal and love, and it's really sweet and really silly, and Kevin Bacon plays it absolutely straight, so does Michael McKean, and I just love The Big Picture. It's a little hard to find, but it's definitely worth your time.
I love that movie too, and the scene that sticks in my head, like whenever I hear the title, I'd always jumps to Martin Short in the car in that long driving sequence where he's on his phone and gesticulating and not driving his car that's moving through traffic.
So good. He had this idea, clearly, I'm in the rig, I'm just not going to touch the steering wheel.
Yeah.
It's so goddamn funny.
Over on my other show, My Favorite Shitty Movie, we just did that a movie was our topic. And it's so if you're interested, if you're interested, no. Well, I mean,
take umbrage with that classification.
That's how we went with the shitty definition. It tanked.
Yeah.
It was barely released.
Yeah.
So people might consider it shitty, but you know, in any event, if you're interested, you can go on my Facebook feed and scroll down there, and you can see Hill, my wife, and I reenacting a scene with Martin Short and Kevin Bacon. Hillary's Martin Short is delightful.
Oh, I can't wait. That's hilarious.
Yeah. And at one point, she does this thing with her eyes, because he does weird things with her eyes. But when she does it, it reminded me of that goofy gremlin. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I do.
It's really fun.
When he sends a drink over to a guy at another table, and the waiter has to sadly recount the guy's reaction. It's so funny. and Martin Short's talking about, I, you're not just getting an agent, you're getting three things.
Yeah.
He just starts listing more and more things. A wife, a mother.
Good stuff. My first one is, I'll also go, I think, in mostly in chronological order, but the first one, I think it's the first time that I ever felt like, oh, this is just a movie that they made for me. I saw it in Natick, Massachusetts with my brother. My brother and I were so happy watching this movie as soon as it started. The opening scene made us like scream. And that is Tony Scott's The Last Boy Scout. Starring Bruce Willis and Damon Wayans. It's so over the top, so incredibly violent. So
you think you're so fucking cool.
Yeah, it's unnecessarily mean-spirited. And when people die, it's really gory. You know, and it's also, it's kind of funny too, with great performances like Taylor Negron's. It's a fun movie. Do you guys remember seeing it the first time? Did you see it in the theater the first time?
I saw it in the theater, and that opening football sequence when the thing happens, fucking lost my shit.
Yeah, I don't think I saw it in the theater. I think I rented it.
It is the best of those sort of like cocaine excess movies. You know, these sort of like high octane macho, everyone's smoking cigarettes and titties, and it's fantastic. It's a brilliant, brilliant movie.
Yeah, it's a movie that embraces and also does not treat as camp its excess. It lives 100% inside its excess.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's not winking at you. It's just, no, this is what I am. I am this insane movie.
And I miss those high cholesterol movies, you know, the Lethal Weapons. They're so embarrassing and wonderful at the same time.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why seeing To Live and Die in L.A. in a theater a couple months ago.
Yeah.
Was such a wonderful experience. Go see it.
Yeah, that's a great movie too. Yeah, it's fun. And it's a thing that like, I really feel like only Tony Scott could deliver this particular version of that. Cocaine fueled type action.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Ridley would never.
No. My God, no. He has to do Napoleon. I didn't like that movie either. Skeleton, give me another one.
Okay, I got another one. These are all from this last year.
That's impressive.
And this is kind of from my category of again, a very nice, tight and clean comedy that manages to not let its plot get in the way of just delivering lots of jokes. Mm-hmm. So, like a Billy Madison or a Super Troopers, you know, that's the kind of thing that I love. And this last year, the Please Don't Destroy the Treasure of Foggy Mountain.
Oh,
I thought they nailed it.
Is it good? I haven't seen it.
Yeah, I usually what happens when you get like a comedy group that then gets to do their movie is, you know, you don't get a Super Troopers. You get, you know, you get something where the plot and the story gets in the way of the jokes.
You get Run, Ronnie, Run.
Yeah. And and the Please Don't Destroy movie has a horribly convoluted plot that somehow serves to just let them do more jokes per minute. And jokes per minute is a jokes per minute movie. That's something I really, I love it when it works like that. Cause when you go into it hoping it's going to be that, and it's like, oh, we're stuck in the story and the characters and their, and how their journeys, I'm like, I came here for jokes, please.
Yeah. There were some good R-rated comedies this past year, I thought.
No Hard Feelings is in that same vein.
Like, No Hard Feelings is more like a, you know, I kind of put that in the category of like, a comedy that kind of surprises you with how many jokes it puts within its more grounded story. You know, No Hard Feelings to me is more like a Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Where it has a really, you know, ultimately, you know, pretty nicely grounded character story, but they manage to balance the jokes and keep giving you lots of jokes and bits and keep that balance going. So again, not like, you know, tipping over into the what are probably the studio notes of like, hey, this needs to have more heart.
Yeah.
So you end up cutting jokes and.
Yeah.
Did you like good. Bottoms? Did you see Bottoms?
I didn't see Bottoms.
Oh, all right.
Bottoms is fun.
That's funny. Falk, what else? What's your next one?
Okay, my next movie is 1992's Glengarry Glen Ross. And
that is a really good movie.
Here's why it hit me so much. It was I was in the middle of acting school.
Oh boy.
You know, and so to me, David Mamet was like the pinnacle of fucking macho theater, just like dude shit. This is the ultimate dude. This is the ultimate like artistic dude, straight dude movie. Despite the presence of Kevin Spacey, but it's the kind of thing that a very like a misguided 20-year-old would just fucking eat up, and that's exactly what I was. It's Al Pacino just like in full scenery chewing, along with David Mamet, full scenery destroying words, Jack Lemmon in this really really. Kind of in almost in a different movie, but playing Shelley in is such a tragic character. Alan Arkin, Kevin Spacey, just fucking wonderful. Ed Harris, Jonathan Pryce, even in a, mm-hmm. in a pretty wordless character, but even just the lighting, it's so sort of like. Overdone and over stylized by James Foley, who's not a particularly like a subtle director anyway. It's a great example of taking a play and really kind of putting it on its feet without actually adapting it much, without actually exploding it out into the world. It kind of remains this very kind of claustrophobic movie.
It's very... Alec Baldwin bit is the only addition, really.
Yeah, the Alec Baldwin monologue. I forgot about that. But yeah, anyway, Glengarry Glen Ross, it just hit 20-year-old me just like a punch to the stomach that I asked for at 4 in the morning after too much beer.
Hillary won't watch that movie. It gives her too much anxiety.
She won't go to lunch?
She will not go to lunch. I have to go to lunch by myself if I want to watch that. Yeah. So it's no good. My other, it kind of goes along with what Skelton was saying about his last title. And for me, it's about the jokes. And the first time I saw it was just on some streaming service. And it was the unrated producer's cut or something they called it. And I thought it was hilarious. And then I saw the theatrical version, which the producers at the beginning of this unrated version have an announcement where they say, please watch theatrical version. It's Sex Drive.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I knew
it
was Sex Drive. I knew it.
Yeah. Yeah. I just.
I've never seen the regular version. I've just seen the.
Let's watch it this weekend.
Yeah. All right. It's hilarious. The complete messy version is hilarious.
Yeah, it's great. But it's the theatrical version is really great because all the, you know, all the solid bits, they're part of the theatrical thing. They just fuck with them in the extended version. But like Skelton said, it's about gags. It's about the narrative is getting mm-hmm. you from one gag to the other. There is, you know, a sweet romance at the center of it, you know, the basic some kind of wonderful you know they're friends or aren't they sort of a thing, and he's trying to get laid with somebody else, blah blah blah, and that's how they come together. But there's just so many good dumb jokes, and Seth Green like turns in this amazing performance. I was on the fence about Seth Green until I saw him in this movie.
Oh yeah. He's hilarious in this. And James Marsden as the archetypal Chet, older, bully brother is really
bully homophobic brother.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. He's really funny.
There's a lot of great performances. And the guy, whose name I can't remember, the guy with the glasses, the chubby best friend guy.
I'm blanking on his name too.
Who's in another movie I'll mention later, but he kills me. I mean, his performance.
Yeah, he's really funny too.
So Clark Duke.
Funny. Yes, yeah, that's it. Clark Duke. Yes,
I've never seen it. I just picked that out of my brain.
Yeah, well, good for you. We'll watch it this weekend
because you're a Hollywood professional.
Yeah, you're a pro. We'll watch it this weekend. Right. Yeah, I hope you like it. Skelton, what else you got?
Okay, I got my next category, and also, again, two movies that are from this year. I'm a sucker for a genre movie that has a really, really nice, you know, production design. And so we're talking like, you know, costume sets, kind of just really making it feel like there's a world there. The movie may or may not be that great, but if it's got atmosphere, you know, and it's done really well, I really love it. So the two in here from this last year were The Last Voyage of the Demeter, the Dracula on a Boat show.
Yeah, I like that a lot. Yeah.
And which is has just a great atmosphere. And the creator, I didn't like the movie that much, but I loved how it looked and the world that was built and the design of everything. It was just really spectacular.
Wow.
So like, yeah, I get, yeah, I can, if it's a, yeah, I can get lost
can
in
get
like the designed worlds of the world genre pictures pretty easily.
I thought Demeter was really cool. I thought it was a great,
I like Demeter as a movie in general. But the atmosphere and the look of it and, you know, the general creepiness and the vibe was pretty, you know, pretty cool.
Yeah, and another really good cast. The acting in that movie,
phenomenal. Although it's like, come on, you know, the boat's not that big. You should be able to find Dracula, guys.
Well, he's tricky. You know, he can fly around. You don't know. Did you see that, Falk?
Not up my alley.
You don't like the vampire shows?
Not really.
Well, what do you like? What is your next title?
My next title is L.A. Story.
Oh,
yeah.
So this is a movie that hit real hard, and I was it was actually the year before Glengarry Glen Ross, but it's Steve Martin wrote it and Mick Jackson directed it, but it really kind of hits the sweet spot for me of very sort of romantic, but also really silly. Mm-hmm. And it tips over in a few places. I think there's a giant casting problem in that Steve Martin cast his wife at the time, Victoria Tennant, and she's not very good. But the tonnage of jokes, of just ludicrous jokes, you know, driving about Los Angeles. It's very hyper local. And the performances of Steve Martin and Sarah Jessica Parker and Richard E. Grant really kind of make up for those little problems. It's very much of a time. It's 1991. But it's very sweet about place. It has magical elements, which I really like, that went along with the surreal humor. And then just sort of also kind of gooey romantic stuff that he threw in. And to me, that's, it made for, you know, kind of a bumpy movie overall, but all those things just hit me specifically right in my interests.
Yeah, I was such a Steve Martin head back then that, of course, I saw it and I loved it. And I remember loving it even more once I had been living in L.A. for a while.
Yeah,
because when I first saw it, you know, I was in New York and I loved it. But I had no idea, like, even though the joke, you know, like the joke about the way they all order a lemon twist in their coffee or whatever, like that made me laugh just because it's so silly. But I didn't really understand it until I lived in L.A.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh.
Yeah.
And then, you know, four-way
no one drives. Yeah.
Yeah.
No one drives in Los Angeles. And
yeah.
But it's just like, I remember laughing almost like in a Large Marge kind of way when Richard E. Grant is walking and you hear this like high pitched like bells ringing and they're like, what's that? He's like, oh, those are my testicles. It's a bloody nuisance. And no explanation.
No, it's just a,
just a stupid joke. It was delightful.
Yeah, I love movies that take the time to do those, I don't know, what do you want to call them, grace notes that have nothing to do, but they fill things up nicely. Yeah, that's a very fun movie. It's one of the last, you know, of the original Steve Martin movies. Like, it was after L.A. Story, started getting into Father of the Bride and cheaper by the dozen and all that stuff.
Was Roxanne before LA Story or right after?
It was before. It was like 88.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, and before that, there was Man with Two Brains and, you know, The Jerk and all that shit. Yeah. Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid, you know. And the LA Story was sort of, I mean, Bowfinger was kind of that again, but
that was later,
not since LA Story was or any of his movies like that. I miss that silly Steve Martin, not the guy who's serious about playing the banjo, although he's a good banjo player and everything. So my next one is, you guys were there when I saw it for the first time in the theater. It's the fourth movie of a franchise starring Sylvester Stallone. It's called Rambo.
I almost picked Rambo.
It's technically Rambo 4, but they just call it Rambo. Yeah. It's got our old pal Julie Benz is in it. And, you know, a good cast of character actors. It's so wildly irresponsible in all the stances it takes. And it's so unbelievably gory, upsettingly violent.
Everyone in Burma.
Yeah, he mows down entire villages. He sets off a nuclear bomb that he outruns somehow.
He reduces hundreds of people with lives and backstories and family into pink mist.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so, and he's weird looking, you know, because he had work done and stuff. So I don't know. I just love that movie. It makes me happy. I return to it all the time when I'm in the mood for that thing. Cause there aren't that many, you know, like the Crank movies kind of, you know, but there just aren't that many over the top, insanely irresponsible action movies like that.
What are those movies that the Project Greenlight dude, that kind of like fat dude made.
Oh, yeah, the Feast.
Those are wildly irresponsible.
Sorry, baby.
Feast 2 Sloppy Seconds is definitely one of my favorite garbage movies of all time. I really love it. Yeah, sorry, baby. and then the alien sprays jizz all over all those ladies. Oh my God, it's disgusting. Skeleton, what's your next title?
Well, my next movie that is made, I felt like it was made for me, is also, you know, again from this last year. When we talked about, you know, comic book movies and you know, how, you know, they've all kind of stagnated except in a few specific cases. Like a comic book or kind of a big pop culture type of movie that is fun and has some humor and big, huge adventure that isn't trying to weigh itself down by being like super serious, like the Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse this last year fit in that category, but specifically Dungeons and Dragons Honor Among Thieves.
Oh, okay. I want to see that.
Was a such a surprising kind of delight in terms of like, oh, they're just having fun with this. They're not like, you know, there's a story and there's character and there's stakes, but it's done in kind of in such a lighthearted manner that it's clearly meant to be a fun popcorn movie. And it clearly also has the feel almost of like, if, you know, you were a nerd who ever experienced this on like a, you know, Saturday night with your friends in the basement playing D&D and just goofing around is what the movie feels like. And so it's just fun. It's just, you know, I'm like, oh, I can watch this 100 times over and it'll just be fun all the time. Yeah,
those guys made Game Night, which was a really solid R-rated comedy.
I think they did a really, really great job, you know, taking Dungeons and Dragons and just, you know, capturing kind of really more, not the essence of like all the mythology, but the essence of what the game is and the big grandiose silly adventures that you know play with your nerd friends and you know roll dice and drink too much Jolt Cola.
I want to see it. I'm so allergic to wall-to-wall CGI movies that
it's definitely that, but I think it's, you know, the goofy silly performances kind of just make you go, yeah, okay, this is a big fun cartoon that they're having fun in.
It's certainly better than the one with Jeremy Irons.
It is way better than that.
Falk, what's your next? All
right. My penultimate movie is 2000's Final Destination. Todd and Skelton know my affection for these movies, but it's a surprising affection because I'm not particularly a horror aficionado like Todd and his wife. And I'm not even that much of a genre guy. But for some reason, Final Destination and the sequels to varying extent just hit on something that I think is so amazingly brilliant and kind of like from a storyteller's point of view, airtight as an evolution of the genre that I love it. I have a very similar feeling to Final Destination as to I do to Coinstar, which is not a movie, but a thing you find at the supermarket. Whereas these people came up with an idea that I will get people to give me money and I'll hand back less of it. That's their entire business model. You give me $100, I'm going to give you like $91 back. And people are going to love it. And, you know, to take what is often the weak part of a movie, which is sort of the getting past the logic of the bad guy, right? Whether he's supernatural or not supernatural or how, but how could he actually do that? And all that shit. It's not that scary at the end. This foregoes that. It goes, okay, we're not going to be scary. We're just going to be clever and fun. Right. And it's about what's coming to get you. Well, fate, the fact that we don't have free will and you subverted that by mistake. Well, now free will is going to come and get you. In ludicrous and imaginative ways. And then couple that with, you know, in the first one, it's a plane crash, but then in the second one, it's memorably the highway crash, right? With the logs and all that. And then eventually the roller coaster in 4, I can't remember what 3 was.
The roller coaster is 3.
Oh, it is. Okay.
4 is 4 is the racetrack.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, the big opening set piece is so, it's just such a refillable engine for this movie that is ultimately also a refillable engine. It's just, it's not, you're not limited to, you know, I'm a guy in a mask with a knife, you know, or I'm a guy with sharp claws. This is, anything's gonna kill you. And it's, you know, this mousetrap scenario. You couple those two things, it's fucking genius. Like, that's just, why they're not making one of these every year, I have no fucking idea.
Well, they are. They're making a reboot requel thing right now.
I know, and I'm mad because I wanted to do it. But anyway, Final Destination just mwah, it felt like it was made for me.
It was funny. I was watching a documentary about it, and one of the producers was very regretful about the choice to make the killer basically invisible. Basically, you know, the specter of death. Because there's no toys. If it had been a guy in a mask,
oh, you got toys. That's you can't sell it's like a, the it's final a brilliant, best. It's a brilliant engine to keep the story going, but then it's
the merch.
No action figures.
That's hilarious. That's so funny.
Exactly.
That's so funny. No scream masks or Freddy Krueger gloves.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, oh, maybe we could, here's some, I don't know, we could sell some plastic rebar.
Yeah.
My next to last one is another comedy movie with that Clark fella in it, and it's Hot Tub Time Machine. Which
the first
I saw, the first one, the second one is really unwatchable, But the first one, I was so delighted. I saw it with you guys. And I was just so delighted by it. It had the absolute right spirit. I mean, being a throwback to these 80s movies, which I like, it had, you know, that spirit that just we're doing this for fun thing. Rob Corddry's performance is just so fucking funny. He's so perfectly obnoxious. Yeah, he's so great. And everyone is in the movie. And of course, you got the anchor of John Cusack, which works for me. I don't know why. He still works for me, even though he's like the straight-to-video guy now. Yeah, it was just so much fun. And then Lizzie Kaplan and the romance and so many jokes. So many good jokes.
It has a good jokes per minute delivery.
It's a delight.
I love it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it's definitely become, you know, one of my comfort food movies. You know, if I get home and I don't know what to watch, you know, I just want to feel comfort. I watch that one. Works. It's great. I love it. Skeleton, you got one more?
Yeah. Well, my last one, it's just what I covered at the beginning, which is ISS, and that kind of mid to low budget, science fiction concept that's character driven I love that stuff because it lets you do, you know, more original ideas in the genre space than you might, you know, than you could do on like a big budget. Once the budget gets too big, it becomes action adventure and it must, you know, sell so much popcorn. But you prefer a
Pandorum.
But you can, like, ISS is kind of a thriller, and, you know, Silent Running is really a character, you know, a character piece. And I would even put like an Outland in the same category because that's really kind of a Western, but it's this kind of low budgety 80s sci-fi, what Peter Hyams, you know, around the 2010 era of the movie, not the year. Really kind of just a stripped down Western showdown, but put in a, you know, sci-fi mining town setup, you know, so that kind of stuff. I love that stuff.
Yeah. Hyams is always a fun go-to director, as is his son. I mean, I know you're not supposed to like Nepo Babies, but I like Peter Hyams' son. I think his name is John. He directs a lot of straight to video Universal Soldier movies, and he directed most of Black Summer. If you saw that zombie show.
Oh yeah. Oh, yeah. I like Black Summer.
I love Black Summer.
Yeah. He's, maybe it's David. I can't remember, but it's Peter Hyams' kid. I think he's good. He's fun. What's your last one, Falk?
Well, I, in terms of pure pleasure, I could have had any of the zombie movies that came out and, you know, from like 2000 to what, 2012 or whatever that run was until Walking Dead kind of stole the thunder. But I chose, in an effort to pick something from the last couple of years, I chose 2021's Nobody. What gives me just as much pleasure is seeing dumb teens decapitated and zombies eat brains is a lot of fighting. I just love fighting. I love the Wicks and the Takens, which were, I considered both of those. But Nobody takes a step further for me in that it continues this insane career of Bob Odenkirk, you know, alt comedy god, who then you know, went on to shine in Breaking Bad and then star in Better Call Saul and turn himself into a heavy duty dramatic performer, and then he was like, well, fuck it, I'm gonna go up to like Northern Canada and study with those stunt guys who've turned into filmmakers and make this movie where a nobody who, you know, formerly wasn't a nobody, takes on a bunch of Russian thugs. And we saw it in a drive-in during COVID, irresponsibly with Todd's teenage son. No, that's probably thousands less, least hardcore movie you see, but,
he just needs to go into the garage.
the scene on the bus alone would put it on this list. But then you have, you know, his dad, Christopher Lloyd, who's in a, you know, assisted living facility, basically in a wheelchair, suddenly come out fucking guns blazing. Odenkirk is not even the best actor. Like, you see the seams a lot. But what he does, he just does so well. And it is only tripled by the fact that he didn't start out doing this, and nor would anyone think that this Chicago improv guy would change himself, and no one is allowed to, really, in Hollywood, mm-hmm. except for like wrestlers turned into actors. So for all those reasons, and the sheer like low budgetness of it, that works into its favor, because it's just a dance movie, like all, you know, all yep. these fight movies are. But you felt that the budget was low, but the care was high, and what they pulled off was pretty remarkable.
Yeah, I like that movie a lot.
Yeah, I liked it too. You know, I was gonna say one, and then you just made me think of another one that I really like, which I guess it's 2 years old now. I was gonna say The Beekeeper, which I really liked.
Beekeeper's fun,
but then you reminded me how much I love the fifth Purge movie called The Forever Purge.
Oh yeah.
That movie is so on the nose with what, you know, it's saying, you know, its messaging is very on the nose. I find it so effective and so engaging. And I was fine with all the other Purge movies, but The Forever Purge, I just thought was sort of a perfect movie for this time. For me specifically, because, you know, that's what I want to see, is that kind of Civil War stuff. We have a Civil War movie coming out.
Civil War,
right? Yeah, the Civil guy, War. The guy who made
Carlin.
Yeah, Civil War. War. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I want to
yeah,
see that.
Yeah, I mean, I like Garland's stuff, but I'm also kind of like, I don't know why we need a Civil War movie when we got all these Purge movies.
That's true. I mean, the Forever Purge probably already did it, and but I don't know. Maybe this one will be better or smarter, or maybe not. I don't know. I want to see it. I'm a sucker for those things. Anything, you know, apocalyptic or just post-apocalyptic works for me.
I eat it up like catnip. I love it. I love it all.
Yeah, yeah. It's good stuff. And there's more and more, you know, straight to streaming end of the world movies that I find interesting. I saw one with Forrest Whitaker and some other semi-famous guy.
I think
it's called How It Ends.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's just a road movie. It's you know, father-in-law and son-in-law are going to look for, you know, the wife/daughter. And they have to get across country during the apocalypse. There's all sorts of trouble.
I saw this movie. Yeah, this is a good movie.
Yeah, it was a good B movie. And there's more and more of those. So I'm glad for that. I'm glad that they continue to make movies for us.
Yeah.
Even though they may not be recognized by SAG or the Golden Globes or, you know, whatever.
Well, in defense of award movies, most of them didn't set out to be that. You know, they just were movies.
And yeah.
So it's not the fault of the movie or the filmmakers that they're like quote unquote important, right? It's the studios, and in a lot of cases, and you know, so like American Fiction, I think should not be thrown on some pile of movies that should have been more important or better. I think it's a really, really solid, interesting movie that I wouldn't necessarily put among like the best movies of the year, but I thought quite good.
Did you like Poor Things?
That's the one I have yet to see. We didn't get a screener, so, you know.
I'll be interested to hear.
I know. I just finished The Curse, Emma Stone's Benny Safdie and Nathan Fielder show. Have you guys seen
that? Oh, yeah. I watched like the first few episodes, and like, I really like Fielder's, like, earlier couple shows, and this one I just, it couldn't, it was just moving too slow for me.
Yeah, I love it. I wish one of you would watch the whole thing, because it's insane.
I might have to go. I might have to go back and finish and give it another chance, because, you know, it's.
Yeah. I'm not kidding when I say it's probably the most bonkers finale you'll ever see of any. Okay. Show.
Well, that's, yeah. I can.
I'm not kidding.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll look at that. Let's wrap this thing up. Thanks, Steve and Steve. That was fun.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. I had a lot. It was fun to go. I really enjoyed this theme. I liked going through old movies I had seen. The list was like 25, and I just sort of
picked
five out of it to try to make it well-rounded and make sure they were, you know, relatively obscure, I guess. You know, I'm not just going to, like, say, you know, the normal ones, like Ferris Bueller. Goodfellas.
Movies, though, I feel like those are the ones that I like, that feel like they were made for everyone.
Yeah. Well, that's why I was going to pick State of Grace, because it came out right when Goodfellas did.
Oh, right.
But
right.
It was about the Irish Mafia, and it was much worse, but it just felt like it was, I don't know, it spoke to me. Ed Harris and Sean Penn, I think, right?
And Gary Oldman.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Gary Oldman's
a crazy... like cousin or something.
Yeah, yeah. There were a lot of movies that I could have picked today.
I like that movie. That would make a good double feature with Run All Night, because you have Ed Harris being an Irish mobster in two movies. Mm.
Oh, yeah. All right. Well, thanks, son.
Hey, you're welcome. Thanks for coming along for the ride, and we'll see you next time on the Film Picks.